Okay, so today's sermon, as I mentioned at the beginning, is a bit of a challenge. It's a challenge because the passage is quite difficult. You'll see why in a moment. But it's actually more of a challenge once you work out what the passage is saying. Because it's all about, well, priorities is a pretty good clue. It's about what we think is important and how we might measure that. That's not just a nerdy scientist measuring thing. We all have priorities. That's why we do what we do. So if your priority is to sleep, you won't be leaping out of bed in the morning. If your priority is to go gardening, you might leap out and go dig or whatever. Okay? So we all make choices. We all have priorities. And we need to understand whether those are conscious and deliberate and what influences that. And particularly, whether they need to change. Okay, so here's the passage that's the bit of the puzzle. And I promise you, this is in Luke's gospel, okay? So Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling his affairs. One day, a report came that that manager was wasting his employer's money. So the employer called him in and said, "What's this I hear about you? Get your report in order, because you're going to be fired." Okay, that's all right so far, unless you're the manager. The manager thought to himself, "Now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches, and I'm too proud to beg. Ah, I know how I'll ensure that I have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired." So he invited each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asked the first one, "How much do you owe him?" The man replied, "I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil." So the manager told him, "Take the bill quickly and change it to 400 gallons. "And how much do you owe my employer?" he asked the next man. "I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat," was the reply. "Here," the manager said, "take the bill and change it to 800 bushels. The rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. Okay, so we've got the manager and his boss. The boss thinks the manager is not doing a great job and calls him before him and says, "Your time is up, you're going to be fired." So just before he's actually out of work, the manager has this ruse. He's described as shrewd here. So I don't know whether you think shrewd is good or bad. If you were described as a shrewd investor, that would probably be a compliment. Somebody who's smart and astute makes, you know, sharp decisions. You might think somebody who's shrewd is a bit of a, you know, slightly suspect. Maybe. Now, this would be an alternative shrewd person. Okay? Okay? You get the idea. So, clearly, these plans don't always go quite so well, the cunning plans. But we need to understand what's going on with this parable, okay? And is the manager, the shrewd manager, is he cunning? Well, okay, so he's about to get fired. And as he says in the parable, he's not strong enough to dig ditches, and he's too proud to beg. So what's he going to do? What should he do? I mean, there's no social security in those days. He's going to be out of work. And if he's been fired for being dishonest or, at the very least, a poor manager, it's going to be difficult to get a job. So he's going to be in real trouble. But the manager had a cunning plan, a shrewd plan, if you like. He planned for the future. Now, whether it's honest or dishonest is a bit of an issue. But we need to work out whether this is a good idea, and particularly whether Jesus is commending dishonest behavior. Because that's what he looks like, what it looks like. So the shrewd, the cunning manager, at his boss's expense, writes down a pile of his debts so that he has favor when he's out of work. That's quite smart, but it is dishonest. Because who is paying for that reduction in the debt. Now, there is some discussion in the various commentaries as to whether he was just writing off his share that would have been coming to him. Well, wouldn't he have been better off keeping that share so that when he's out of work, he's got a little bit of money in the bank? Possibly. More likely is that it's at his boss's expense that he's letting off the debt or reducing the debts to curry favour with the people who were the creditors. So is Jesus commending dishonesty? Well, two parts to the answer. Firstly, no, he's not. Remember that this is a parable, and Jesus told parables to get people to think and to get our attention. So you will have, well, I'm sure you will have remembered last week's parable, the lost son. So that's a very familiar story, the prodigal son, very familiar story. So it's kind of the impact and the shock of some of that passes us by. But just remember, in a culture as when Jesus was telling that story, you respected your elders. Now, to some extent that happens today, but not much. In Jesus' day, that was a big issue. So for the younger son to go to his father and say, I wish you were dead, give me my inheritance now, which is what he was asking, that's an outrageous thing to say. You know, utterly shocking. I mean, it's shocking if you think about it now. In Jesus' day, monumental shock. So Jesus was getting people's attention with that. And in an earlier parable, Jesus says, if you follow me, you need to hate your father, your mother, your wife, your brother, and your sister. That's in Luke 14. Now, does he really mean you have to hate your family? Well, no, we explained that and understood that. But he uses the word hate to make people think and to get their attention. So this parable of the shrewd manager, yes, it's to get our attention. That's part of the answer as to whether Jesus was commending dishonesty. But actually, there's a much more serious and important point behind it. And the lessons of what this parable is about are revealed in the verses that come immediately after. So there's a little bit more. The point of the parable, and this is the verses that follow on from what I read. This is Jesus speaking at the end of the parable. So the manager has been commended by his boss for being, you know, shrewd, if dishonest. So Jesus now says, and it is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of light. Here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your earthly possessions are gone, they will welcome you into an eternal home. So Jesus, he says in the verses, here's the lesson. So we need to work out what that lesson is for us. Okay, so there's a contrast in two of the verses that are in that parable. So the first bit in verse 4, we read earlier, the manager works it out. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. Because I've let them off the debt, they'll be friendly to me. He works that out. And he's doing something now for his future. That's his plan. In 9, Jesus says to the disciples, use your worldly wealth, money, in other words, to gain friends for yourselves, so that when your money's gone, i.e. when you're dead, because the money, whatever you have in the bank at that point, doesn't matter, not to you, might to your relatives, but not to you, but when the money's gone and no use to you, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. So what Jesus is saying, and this is quite a challenging point, is we should use our worldly wealth, our money primarily, for relationships that will have eternal significance. So the man in the story, he used, well, his boss's money for his benefit, for his future. Jesus is saying, you know, that's shrewd, that's quite a smart plan, and people in the world are smarter at working out their future than the children of the light, the Christians are. You, Christians, me, we should use our money for eternal significance. for our future. Our future when the money itself doesn't matter. And that's quite a challenge because, yes, we read the Bible verses about being a cheerful giver. That's part of it. But what else do we do with our money and our time? Do we actually use it for things that really, really matter? Well, Jesus has a bit more to say about that in a moment. If you're faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in large ones. But if you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. So these verses come immediately after where we started. Okay? So this is not a surprise. This is how the world works day to day. We know that if we're faithful in little, we might be trusted with something greater. So, for example, if you're bringing up children, you probably don't give them £100 a week pocket money. I'm guessing. And when you were a child, I'm sure you didn't get £100 a week. You know, not a chance. So you give a child a modest amount of pocket money with a view that they learn how to handle a small amount so that when they get older and they have a rise in their pocket money, they know how to handle it. Because if you gave a 10-year-old 100 quid, I don't know, not many 10-year-olds would have £100 by the end of the weekend. They'd probably go and blow it on something. So to that principle that you start with something little and you learn how to handle that, and then you're entrusted with something of more value. That's, you know, that's not a surprise. We also apply that in relationships. You know, if you meet somebody for the first time, you don't open up and tell them your deepest secrets and your greatest fears and hopes. Not a chance. You tell them a little bit about yourself. And as the relationship develops, possibly over many years, they learn more about you. You learn that they're trustworthy. So you give them greater responsibility by telling more of your, you know, your deepest secrets. So that principle that if you're faithful in a little, you're entrusted with more, that works day to day. That's how we live. But Jesus is applying that to spiritual things. So if we're trustworthy with, well, we'll come to that. Let's just see what comes next. Don't forget the loan. So I've talked about that in the context of giving a child pocket money or bringing up children or in relationships. But the context of this story is about money. You know, the shrewd manager is using his boss's money for his benefit. So it's the context is about money. It's not about day-to-day relationships and bringing up kids, although those, you know, kind of are relevant. The context is about money, so we need to think about this in terms of money. The clue as to how this applies is the very next verse. Okay, remember, if you're responsible in little, you'll get more. Jesus then says, and if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? So it's a little more than just money then. So Jesus says, if you're untrustworthy with money, then how can you be trusted with things that really matter, with real riches? Because in heaven, you know, money is going to be irrelevant. But heavenly riches, whatever that means, we'll come back to that, that's much more valuable. And if we've been untrustworthy with the stuff that actually eternally isn't going to matter, the money, why would we be trusted with the greater heavenly riches? So what comes later is much more valuable, much more important than our bank balance. Although we are narrow, we focus on tomorrow, or possibly not tomorrow, maybe today. You know, we live very short term, with a very short term view. And the manager, the shrewd manager, he planned for the future, and Jesus is saying, we need to plan for the future and think about what really matters, the true riches, the heavenly riches he's talking about here. So there's another little illustration about trustworthiness as well that Jesus uses here. If you're faithful with other people's things, why should, sorry, if you are not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things that are your own? So again, day-to-day life, this sort of works. If somebody lends you a, I don't know, a garden tool or something, you know, a lawnmower or a pair of shears or something, we're probably quite careful with those things because we know we'll have to give them back to whoever lent them to us. And we wouldn't want to give them back shears that have come apart or a lawnmower that's blown up. We know we would be moderately careful with whatever it is because we know we're going to give it back. Because we know that our friend would be pretty ticked off if we had driven the lawnmower over the gravel and, you know, all the blades were mangled. So because it's theirs, we're probably slightly careful with it, which is good. We should be. So here, Jesus is saying, if you're not faithful with something which is not yours, and that means money, so that's interesting. So Jesus is taking the view here that the money that we have isn't actually ours. It's entrusted to us to look after and use, but it's not actually ours. But if we're very sloppy about how we manage that and how we care for that, then why would we be trustworthy with something which is our own when we're not going to be called to account? So that's a bit of a problem. When we're held to account for other people's stuff, then we are slightly careful. But when we're, if we're not even trustworthy with that, then there's not much hope for us being trustworthy with anything else. So we're faithful if somebody's watching for the lawnmower or whatever it is. But what if not? Okay, so the final verse in this little section is really the heart of all of this section, this passage. And the heart of the matter is a deliberate use of language there. It's about our hearts. So the next section, no one can serve two masters, for you will either hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one or despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. This might be slightly familiar. The notion of serving two masters is probably a fairly common English phrase. Definitely a common English phrase, actually. But the way this is worded, you cannot serve God and money. So do we serve money? That's a funny idea. We would like to think that we use money, so it's our servant. After all, we decide how we spend what we've got and how we earn money. We decide that. So surely it's our servant. Well, maybe not. I mean, Jesus is saying here, actually, it can be your master. We'll come to an example of that in just a sec. Notice also that Jesus is using pretty harsh language here. There isn't any greyness about the two masters. It's you love one and you hate the other. Pretty binary. Not any choice. You cannot serve two. You love one and you hate the other. So we have to work out who is the master and whether the money really is a master. Okay, now I said that two masters phrase might sound familiar. I guess it's in common English parlance, but it's also in Matthew's Gospel. So there's a little section in Matthew. So this is at the bottom down here. No one can serve two masters, for you will love one and hate the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So that's almost, it probably is the same wording. So it appears, that little sentence appears both in Matthew and in Luke. But the verses which come before that in Matthew are quite revealing. Don't store up treasures here on earth where moths can eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. So that familiar phrase for where your treasure is, there is your heart. Okay, treasure in heaven, using our money, our worldly resources on earth and being trustworthy, that's all kind of theoretical. We need to work out what that really means for us today. because we're all different and we have different experiences of money, we have different amounts of money, and we use our money in a variety of ways. So the first thing, are we obsessed with money? From what we've been talking about today, it sounds like I am, because I'm talking about it and not much else. But think about that, the shrewd manager. How shrewd are we? And I don't mean are we good investors, are we shrewd investors, although it would be good if we were. Do we think about the future? So the shrewd manager made a plan, put it into action, although it was a dishonest plan. And Jesus says, we should think ahead. Use our money for eternal things, not things on earth. So we should think ahead. Jesus tells us to do that. And then the key question, which master are we going to serve? So that verse, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money. So we have to make a choice there, whether we're going to serve God as our master or whether we're going to serve money. But do we really serve money? Now, there are some classic and less classic examples in literature about people who serve money. So here's one. This is the Disneyfied version of Scrooge. Okay, so those of you who are, you know, like Dickens and all of that, you can think about the Dickens version. Those of you who don't know who Dickens is, you might recognise Donald Duck at the back here with his nephews. So they had apparently had an uncle called McScrooge who had lots of money. So this is, I don't know if you can read that, depth gauge, 90 feet. So the gold is 90 feet deep and he's swimming around in his gold. Okay, so obsessed by money? Well, clearly, I don't think anybody here is like this. I'm sure that's not the case. So we're not obsessed by money, probably. We don't swim around in it and lie in bed dreaming about, you know, what we're going to spend our money on. We're probably not like that. If it was, it would be pretty obvious. But all of us, yes, many of us, I'm not saying all, that's probably unfair, but we might have one of two attitudes. Either I've worked hard for this money, it's my money, and therefore I'm going to be careful and hang on to what I've got. Now, to have that attitude, it doesn't matter how much money you've actually got. You might be a millionaire who's worked hard to get all that money, and you might think you're going to hang on to it. On the other hand, you might have a much more lowly position financially, but you still have to work hard for your money, so you're going to be careful with it. That's one attitude. On the other hand, we might think, well, actually, I've got so little money, I need every penny. And it's, you know, it's for me. I need to buy my dinner tomorrow. So no matter how much we've got, we can fall into that position where we think we need to hang on to it because we need it or we want it now. So the verses here about serving money or serving God, that applies to both of those conditions. Either I earned it and I must hang on, or I have so little I need to hang on. We're still having to make a choice as to what we do with that money that actually God has entrusted us with. And at the start of the service, I said this was a difficult passage. The passage is quite complicated, but actually that lesson as to who we serve, it's very hard to stand here and tell you need to decide, because actually I need to work that out, and that's a challenge for me. You know, we all have to decide who's the master. Okay, so it's still a little bit theoretical. We're not swimming around in pools of money, but we have to work out what we do practically. So, some fairly simple questions then. What do we give time, effort, and money to? Because that's a reflection of whether we think the money is our servant or our master. And giving it away Well, where do we give it? If we give it to, I don't know, to assist the starving in any part of the world, or if we give it to our neighbours, or we give it to our children, or our parents, you know, we need to be quite clear that each of those gifts expresses something of our priorities. So if we give the money to our children, then we're saying they are very important. So that's a good thing. We wouldn't want to not do that. But if we give to them and expend it to so much that we give nothing to anybody else, is that the right thing to do? Tricky. There's no easy answers here, but I need to think about what I give time, money, and effort. We need to work out who the three most important people are. You know what the answer is for this? Me, myself, and I. Okay? That's part of that question about priority. And critically, which master are we going to serve? Are we going to serve God or money? And we have lots of things that are important in our lives. And they're good and right and proper. But getting the balance as to which one of the important things actually is in charge. So, you know, work is important, church, family, leisure. All those things are good and right and proper. And there's a great long list, more than that. But we need to get them in the right proportions. Which master is the key? So the bigger the word, the more important it is in life, possibly. Now Jesus finishes this section with a little dialogue with the Pharisees. So what he was talking about wasn't addressed to the crowd or the Pharisees, it was addressed to the disciples who already knew him. Okay, so that would be, if you put that into church context, that's to Christians. He's giving that parable to Christians and saying, plan ahead. Use your money for eternal value. But he ends talking to the Pharisees because they were listening in. And this is quite harsh. The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value is highly detestable in God's sight." Okay, so highly detestable in God's sight. That's a pretty strong phrase. So the things that people value, in the context of the Pharisees, that's power, status, respectability, and money. Jesus says, those things that people think are great are highly detestable in God's sight. So that's pretty harsh. I mean, really harsh. And there's three little things that leap out from this. So the Pharisees justify themselves in the eyes of others. So if we're looking to see whether we're getting praise and adoration and compliments from the people around us, and for people to think that we're doing all right, then that's like the Pharisees. And Jesus doesn't approve of that at all. Critically, God knows our hearts. So no matter what other people think of us, whether they think that we're kind or generous or mean or rich or poor or lazy or hardworking or shrewd, whatever, doesn't matter what they think. It matters what God thinks. And critically, we should be really concerned about what God views as valuable. I mean, it's no point running after things that God sees as detestable. I mean, that's just dumb. And yet, it's easy to do. We should be pursuing things that God values. Okay, summary then. Get a plan. Not an insurance plan. Work out what really matters for the future. And the future doesn't mean my old age when I retire. It means my eternal future. So we should all, I should use what I have for things of eternal significance, not for transient stuff now. And that's a challenge. And coupled very closely to that is which master, God or money? You know, and this notion that money is our master, I think it's an insidious master. And whether we've got lots or little, it can still dominate our lives. If we have really, really little, we might be thinking, I must get more, I must get more. Well, you might need to get more so you can eat. But that becomes then all-consuming, and we forget that there actually may be people who have even less than you. On the other hand, if we have some money, we might well be thinking, I need to be careful with this because I might need it in the future. Okay, and that's difficult because we might need it in the future. We are told explicitly to look after our families and plan sensibly. But that doesn't mean we hang on to things. We should be open-handed. Otherwise, money will dominate.